This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 24, my cousin Gene Larkin, with special guest Dan Zabrowski, recorded on March 10th, 2016. Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Tribe, episode 24, with your hosts, me, Matt Lyons, and Jason Lukart. Jason, how are you?
I'm good. The highlight of my last week since we last spoke was last year I bought a pinball machine that I'd been wanting to buy for years. And so I've had the pinball machine for about 8 months. And Saturday, after eight long months, I finally beat the high score in the pinball machine. So that and the baseball, those have been the highlights of my week.
It's just pinball 1A, baseball 1B, right?
Yes. In regular season baseball, it would maybe have a chance at being 1A. Spring training's not going to beat out a pinball record.
What kind of pinball machine is it anyway?
It is the Jurassic Park pinball machine from when the original movie came out. So it's a 1993 edition. It's the pinball machine I remember playing with my dad on a road trip. And then there was a road stop between Chicago and Iowa City where I went to college that had the Jurassic Park pinball machine. So that's the one I had always wanted. And I finally got it last year.
Wow, that is awesome. Is there a really underwhelming sequel to it 15 years later?
No, I don't know. I'm sure what's going on in the world of pinball these days?
I think it's slowing down just a little bit. So I think we've got a great show today. We just got a couple things up front. And then after that, we got our first guest ever since, well, since we came back, we've got our first guest of this new little reboot, which is Dan Zabrowski, from ESPN, the developer of Zips, who you got to talk to for a good 40 minutes or so.
Yep, we had a great talk.
Yeah, lots of Indian stuff, lots of Ghostbusters and other not quite Indian stuff, which is still great.
We had to rein in the Star Wars talk. We could have gone all night just on Star Wars.
I'm sure I'll have to edit down maybe a tiny bit of that. I mean, I did go like, what are we at? 4 hours, I think, something like that. No, it's too bad. So yeah, getting right into the direct Indian stuff. They've been playing spring training, which that luster wore off almost right away. But we haven't had any injuries, which is good that I've seen. Not a single person has been injured. Can't say the same for the Tigers, who I saw that Upton left the field with something. I don't know if anything came of that, but Justin Upton left with a knee, I think. I don't know.
I hadn't even heard. But, yeah, I mean, I probably just precautionary. They certainly aren't in a position where losing Justin Upton would do them any favors.
Yeah. So then the only thing really Indians-related, I guess, is that two players they could have signed, they didn't. Which is the first, Austin Jackson signed with the White Sox to a one-year, $5 million deal. And then first baseman, or probably should be DH, Pedro Alvarez signed with the Baltimore Orioles for a $1 million, 5.5. So compared to those, I guess we can call the equivalent for the Indians with Austin Jackson, I guess, would be the Rajai Davis signing, although I don't think he's going to get nearly as much time as Jackson would have. I think it's going to be more of a platoon situation. But either way, I'm happier with having Davis at what he made than getting... I'm happier with the idea of a Davis-Naquin platoon than I am with the Indians just signing Jackson, I think. And then with Alvarez, I am way happier that they got Mike Napoli, even if it's Napoli was $7.5 million, I think, and go up to 10. But I'm way happier than that with Pedro Alvarez, getting him who would be probably a downgrade to Santana, I would think, at first base defense. What do you think?
I'm definitely with you on preferring Napoli to Alvarez. Yeah, I mean, Alvarez is not a defensive upgrade on anyone. I think, you know, he's probably got a higher floor than Napoli in terms of being less likely to just kind of totally fall apart. But I feel like Pedro Alvarez is who Pedro Alvarez is. And, you know, he's going to hit some home runs. He's not going to get on base much. So I would definitely rather have Napoli. Given the choice between the two, I'd rather have Jackson than Davis. They're at basically the same money. And I am intrigued with the possibility of Tyler Naquin getting to be the center fielder. But I'd rather have Jackson than Davis. But, I mean, the thing, like, you could drive yourself nuts with that. The offseason doesn't work where you get to see who signed for how much money at the end and then pick who your favorite team should have signed. Like,
right.
Austin Jackson wasn't going to sign for 1 year, $5 million back in December. And if the Indians had waited thinking, oh, you know, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks before opening day, he'll do that. Like, there's no way to know that. So even if I would prefer him, It doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, good for the White Sox getting someone who I think is going to be an upgrade for them. And on that level, you know, I don't like it as an Indians fan because, it's another team in the division improving itself. But I'm not losing any sleep over the Indians having signed Davis and not having signed Jackson.
Yeah, and I think, like, the report came out almost immediately afterwards that Jackson wanted more money to come to Cleveland anyway, so it would have been probably closer to what they signed Mike Napoli for, if not more, but they didn't want to. I can't blame him if they had that set at one. If they didn't want to spend more than $5 million on him, he wanted more. I can't blame him for not getting him, and I don't know if they didn't.
Yeah, and once they had Davis, like, also signing Jackson is basically punting on Davis. And, you know, while I think Jackson has a better chance of working out well, like, I don't think the Indians should just, you know, punt on a $5 million investment who hasn't even played in the game for them yet. So, you know, we've talked about the offseason before. I wish Jackson had signed that deal with someone else just so he wasn't playing on a team that the Indians are competing with this year. But it is what it is.
Yeah, and I do wonder if the Indians didn't sign Davis relatively pretty early in the offseason, if they would have signed anybody different, but can't do anything about it now. And with Alvarez, how long do you think it's going to be before he hits two or three home runs before Santana hits one, where everybody's calling, well, why didn't they sign him instead? I give it a week, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Indians fans don't need much to jump on Carlos Santana.
So, I mean, it's spring training. Tyler Naquin looks great. James Ramsey doesn't. We're here a couple more weeks. Do you have anything else from spring training you want to talk about?
No, I mean, you know, most of the starting pitchers have looked good. You know, like you said at the top, no one important has any sort of significant injury. Zach McAllister's missed some time with the flu, but that's a different story. No, I think, you know, mostly we're just kind of playing things out. Tyler Naquin's probably the most kind of notable player to watch just because the center field job is the one that's most up in the air. Nothing's really jumped out in terms of the fifth starter discussion that we had last week. I still think, you know, Tomlin's the front runner just because of the service time stuff and options. No, I think we're kind of into that, just hoping nothing goes wrong, which would be an injury.
Yep. And I know Uribe got his first start and he's fine. So,
yep.
Yeah. So we're going to take a little tiny break here. When we come back, we're going to have Dan Zabrowski of ESPN.
Our guest this week is ESPN.com writer Dan Zimborski, who's also well known for having created the Zips projection system. Dan, welcome to Let's Talk Tribe.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. As I keep saying every week, baseball's getting closer and closer, so it's a good time of year.
Oh, it's a great time of year. And I don't have to dig out driveway anymore or any of that stuff, too. So the sun and the groundhog and baseball, it's all a blend of that spring niceness.
I agree. And I don't know about your neck of the woods. My neck of the woods, we had a super mild winter. So I sort of feel like the baseball offseason was a little thrown off. I didn't have as much digging out as usual.
Oh, I'm in Ohio. We didn't have much. Are you in Ohio too?
I'm actually not. You would think so. I'm actually.
Yeah, I always assume that everybody is in the city where with the team they cover, but I know that's not true. So.
So, as I mentioned in your introduction, I think one of the things, probably the thing you're best known for, is Zips, the projection system that you created. I think back, was it 2003, 2002?
Yeah, it was that time frame. It's always hard to have a conception date for Zips. The first official year of the projections was 2004.
Okay.
But it had been kind of in development for that. There were some experiments. It was a slow-moving thing. I didn't just sit down and knock it out in a week, and then it was a projection system. It took a long time. It was a labor of love because no one was paying me anything for it at the time. But later it became a labor of money, which is an improvement over love.
So what drew you to the idea of putting a projection system together? What was, given that it was going to be a labor of love, what was the sort of impetus?
Well, it kind of stems from some talks I had with a friend of mine named Chris Dial. He's around the sabermetric community. He's actually one of the board members of Saber. Brilliant chemist. He's a brilliant guy. And we talked about in the 90s about we could probably put together a basic projection system that did as well as some of the more complex ones that were kind of, you know, cloaked in secrecy because projections weren't a big thing back then. that's kind of the similar concept to what Tom Tanger later did with Marcel, but he found that individually. He didn't steal any ideas. He that was independent. I don't want to make it sound like Tom ripped us off. But we never actually did that. And it came later that I was blogging. This was like in the early days of blogs. And I was writing about transactions, and I figured, hey, you know what's useful for someone writing about the future? A projection system. I had some ideas for that. I had some ideas on implementing some of Oris McCracken's research at the time, the DIPS research, sure. Which is why Zips rhymes with DIPS. And it developed from there.
So you mentioned, you know, in terms of what else was out there shrouded in secrecy, what else was out there? I don't know when I first started paying attention to projections, but I guess it wasn't until 2004 or later, because I don't really remember the pre-Zips projection era.
Well, fantasy publications tended to have their own secretive little projection system. Baseball Prospectus had their older projection system that Clay Davenport developed. I forget if it was Vlad or Wilton at the time. It was either one of those because they were cheap. These were the pre Pacoda years,
right? And so you mentioned fantasy things. I guess that's what I think of in terms of projections. I guess in my mind, until the last 10 years or so, it always just felt like someone was just kind of like, I don't know, maybe 29 home runs. It never felt, I mean, maybe it was, I guess, probably more scientific than I thought. Did you just have the sense that you could put something together that would be better?
I didn't know what I was getting into. I had no idea if it would work. I had no idea if it had value or anybody would like it. I just sat down and said, okay, let's do that. And the origin story of the name, besides rhyming with DIPS, it's completely ridiculous, essentially because I'm a completely ridiculous person. Because it started out to rhyme with Zips. I couldn't think of a player to use as an acronym because that tends to be more popular. So I just decided, okay, Zimborski Projection System. But that was SIPS. And I thought SIP sounded like some kind of weird upscale juice box that hipsters like. You know, grab some sips. So I made the little I and the little S initially because it reminded me of Chips, California Highway Patrol, because that was one of my two favorite shows as a kid, along with Dukes of Hazzard. But the S, I accidentally capitalized it the first time, and that's how it stuck. This is a real story. They printed that story in ESPN magazine a few years ago because that is a true story.
It's a great story. I like the changing from Sips. Have you ever thought about maybe going back to do the hipster juice box company?
I don't know. There's a lot of competition around the juice box company, like the industry, and I don't want to end up with a juice thing like Capri Sun. I hated Capri Sun. You know, the pouches.
Oh yeah, yes.
You'd always put the straw and it would go through the back.
I always just aimed for the bottom. It was a much bigger target. I'm just going to flip it over. I'm not someone who needs to set their juice box down. I can just hold it and drink it kind of in one go. So the tiny hole on the Capri Sun was not for me.
I always failed at Capri Sun. It's one of the biggest failures in my life. I don't think as a child I ever successfully drank a Capri Sun without making a mess.
It's never too late.
I don't know. It seems kind of weird being a man pushing 40 just buying himself some Capri Sun. it feels like there's an age appropriateness for that. Kind of like the best juice box at the time when I was a kid was the High C Ecto Cooler, and it had Slimer on it.
It's coming back for the new movie. Ecto Cooler will be back.
Are you serious?
Yes. I don't know if it's in juice box form or container form, but they've confirmed that Ecto Cooler will be back. So regardless of your other feelings about the project, I'm excited about the movie. Ecto Cooler coming back is...
Oh, I was worried about the remake because I generally don't want to see remakes of things that I liked when I was a kid because it means I'm old enough for there to be a remake. But for some Ecto Cooler,
yeah,
man, I think that'd be worth it. I hope it tastes the same.
If it doesn't, people are going to riot.
So yeah, it will ruin my childhood and my life by extension if it doesn't taste as good as I remember.
Well, speaking of formulas, whatever the formula or equations for Zips are, how did you put them together initially and how much have they changed in the dozen or so years since then?
Well, I've been able to do a lot more simply because computers are a lot more powerful then. Back at that time, I was running a Pentium 4, didn't have a lot of RAM compared to today. I don't remember how much RAM, but computers can process a lot more data than they used to be able to. So you can do more things. Zip is essentially the product of literally hundreds of mini studies where I have to where you have to study the interactivity of different variables, from basic statistics to descriptive variables like speed score and the like. Zips is – there's a lot of sweat equity in Zips. There's more sweat than genius in Zips. People are always like, you must be super smart. I'm like, no, I'm not really super smart. I just put a lot of work into it. Sean Foreman, that's a smart guy, baseball reference guy. That's a smart guy. But I'm just the guy who spent a lot of time doing this.
So you're saying Sean Foreman is smart but lazy?
Oh, no. He has his own thing. I don't want to get him the idea of doing a projection system because – Sean Foreman is probably the smartest guy in Sabermetrics, possibly, and he would make a projection system that would, you know, crush us all and wipe out our families. Just that's he's a smart guy.
Well, and he gave us the play index, which is like for me the greatest baseball gift there's ever been.
Oh, it's a nerd paradise, the play index. It is absolutely worth the money.
Yeah. You know, it's like my best investment every year is the $30-35, whatever it is, to have my Play Index subscription. Anyone listening, you should go get a Play Index subscription. It's a blast. So computers are more powerful. You can do more with it. So year to year, what kind of tweaking goes on? Do you look at what was off in the last year and try to figure out how – I mean, what goes on there?
Well, generally, the sources of bias are easier to wring out, and most of that has been wrung out over the years. Like, for instance, young players versus old players. Those specific problems are kind of the low-hanging fruit, and most of that has been resolved. The challenge from year to year is generally twofold. One, it's incorporating new data, figuring out what it means from a predictive standpoint and how to implement it into the existing model. And two, is different kinds of information a projection system can give me. When I started, Zips only gave me essentially the baseline projection. Now I get entire careers for players. I can tell you the odds of someone hitting 27 home runs in 2018 if I want to. There's a lot more you could do, and the more you can do with a projection system, the more interesting questions you can tackle, because a projection system really is a baseline estimate of the future, and that of course has a lot of applications.
Sure. So when you talk about career projections and things like that, is that stuff you put out as much? I feel like what's coming up in 2016 is certainly what people are most interested right now. Is there somewhere people can check out like the longer term stuff? Is that kind of things you just put into, things that you write when it's appropriate, or what do you do with that data?
Oh, a lot of stuff I hoard greedily, like a war profiteer. I've released the base projections for free for a long time. I think those have a lot of value, but there's always some stuff that I like to, keep for the readers. Mm-hmm. It's I don't know. I get maybe it's cynical in some way, but I do like to save interesting things for different times because I am a writer and I do want people to come read what I write and not just know everything ahead of time.
Right.
War profiteer. I just like saying that.
So how much would it cost to find out the chances that Francisco Lindor gets 3,000 hits in his career?
Oh, well, that I could tell you. I'm not going to charge for everything. I have him at 12% right now.
All right. That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. Zips likes him very much. Right now, the mean projection for his career is 2393 hits and 56.7 additional war compared to what he already has. That puts him around 60.
Yeah. So
that's a good midpoint career. I'm actually
borderline Hall of Fame. So.
Yeah, well, in a normal Hall of Fame, not in this weird Hall of Fame we have. But
who knows what the Hall of Fame will look like by 20, however many years it is before he's there. I'm hoping some things have gotten smoothed out by then.
Yeah, by war remaining among hitters, Lindor actually ranks sixth in baseball in Zips.
Wow.
Behind Trout, Harper, Correa, Machado, and Bryant.
Okay, that's good company.
That is very good company. People will probably say, "Oh, it's a fluke," but when a when a 21-year-old hit like he did last year and took that big step up, even if there's a small regression back, he's established a new baseline level of play. He's a terrific defensive player. His top comp is Julio Franco, if you're curious.
Interesting for Indians fans.
And so that means that he's going to play until he's like 80. Yeah. You know, Julio, Julio Franco, I mean, his story began when he emigrated in 1870.
I read a few months ago that he was still playing last year. I can't remember if he was back in the Dominican or the Mexican League, but he was like a coach who still like once a week was in the lineup at the age of like 57 or however old he is. Julio Franco's amazing.
Yeah, there's always those guys that you can't take them out of baseball. It was, what was that league? The United League. This was 2014, I think. He appeared in a few games for the one of the teams. Ricky Henderson was like that too. He kept playing until they stopped letting him play, essentially. I mean, he had his last year in the majors, he was 44, I think. I don't actually have it in front of me. But he also played a couple more years in independent ball. Right. And actually still played really well. I think he was like 46 and had a 450 on base percentage in the independent baseball. And of course, the quality is much lower in independent baseball league. But still, he was 46.
Yeah. Well,
actually, I just opened it up now. Wow. At 45 years old, he was playing for Newark in the Atlantic League.
Right.
And Ricky Henderson, he still hit 281, 462, 436 with 37 stolen bases and 2 caught stealing. I'm not convinced he wouldn't put up a 350 on base percentage right now.
Yeah.
And he's going to be 58 this year.
Someone should bring him back.
Yeah, he's probably better than Jeff Francoeur.
Well, that's a low bar. He's probably better than a lot of guys.
Well, I'm being conservative and respectful to Jeff Francoeur.
So what amount of the work that goes with Zips is done during the off season versus during the season?
Well, the off season is when I run all the projections for real. So there's a lot of work done in the off season. Usually tinkering happens during the middle of the season. I don't want to be tinkering while I'm running projections. Then I get slow and the projections fall behind and people get mad at me and they send me tweets about saying, when is X going to go? And I can't say, oh no, I'm doing something else. I probably wouldn't answer like that, but you know what I mean?
So then, when you're less busy with that, is that when you can just do more writing, or do you just kind of sit back and enjoy the show?
Well, I'm always writing. That never stops. They pay me to be a writer, so they kind of expect me to write fairly regularly. It would be weird if they just gave me money for doing nothing. But
and how does
that's the dream of everyone?
We don't need to get into your personal finances, but so you write for ESPN, Zips. Is at least primarily housed at Fangraphs, right?
Yeah, I'm a writer for ESPN, and ESPN doesn't like own Zips or have any exclusivity to Zips. Essentially, I'm paid to be a writer who has an interesting secondary skill set.
Okay.
I know there's always this belief that most of the people in sabermetricians, and I've been in sabermetrics for 20 years now, essentially, there's this belief that most saber guys are essentially slumming it as writers until they can get a front office job. I've done consulting in the past, as a lot of these guys have, I prefer working in media. I prefer being a writer. I kind of say the cereal is the prize.
All right. What is it that you think you would be worse off working for a team? Is it the actual writing, or is it
it's just not a great fit for my skill set. I've worked very hard to become a solid writer, and I think I'm a pretty good one. I mean, nobody's complained about my writing, and they keep paying me, so I assume my writing's okay. And also, I'm a very talkative person. I'm a very social person, and there's no way I couldn't be active, you know, in social media talking about things. I don't want to just sit in a room and crunch numbers and do that kind of thing. I like what I do. I have a great job, and maybe when I was a kid, I thought I wanted to work for a team. But as I've grown an adult, I think I have, you know, I've found like a better dream in a way.
Well, that's good. That sounds like a good situation. How much of, so you're writing year round. This time of year, I have to imagine most of what you hear from people is related to the projections.
Yeah, this is the big projection time of the year.
Right.
We're having the our usual ESPN magazine baseball preview, and of course, there's a lot of zips in there. And this is the time where you start to see team standings and people get mad at me the most. But that's okay. If they can't love you, you want them to hate you. It's when they have apathy that you're in trouble as a writer.
What percentage of the feedback would you say is anger from people about the projections?
Probably the majority, because it makes more sense to protest to something you don't like than to send like fan mail. And really, I kind of get more entertained by hate mail than fan mail, because hate mail, I can't really take myself too seriously generally. And when people are like, "Man, I love your work," I'm like, "Okay, good." But when someone sends me like hate mail, that's usually completely incoherent. It just like makes my day. Like, I don't know if you saw the Murray Chass thing.
Yes.
A few months ago.
You should tell people about the Murray Chass thing.
Oh, the Murray Chass thing. Well, for those that are familiar, Murray Chass was this old baseball writer who covered labor issues very well for a long time. But as he lost, as he got older, he became kind of bitter and angry about sabermetrics and kind of hates everyone in sabermetrics. So in his yearly blog entry where he talks about his Hall of Fame ballot, he spent the first half of his blog entry just being really mad at me. He wrote my name like 30 times. Like, who is this? Zimborski? And at the end, he couldn't figure out if my name was Zimborski or Zimbabski, which he started typing at some point. I'm not making this up. And then he called me the Digital Dandy, which is the nickname I've adopted because it's an amazing nickname.
It's an amazing nickname.
It's like, thanks, Murray. This is awesome.
I would pay good money to be branded with that kind of nickname.
I got a personal nickname. That's something you can't just buy.
And the nice thing is now, many years from now, your tombstone is largely sorted out for you.
Yeah. I never really thought of that, but I hope that wouldn't be bad on the tombstone. I could I can have that. I could have a nice snarky quote about myself. I won't get to see it, which is a disappointment. But the funny thing was I got into the Baseball Writers Association that same week. And actually, I think I was actually more excited about the Murray Chass than getting into the BBWWA. Even though that has really good professional benefits, since access is easier. I can, vote on awards and vote for the Hall of Fame in 10 years. So really, I have no complaints about 2016 so far. But we got a long, long way to go.
So you meant, angry fans. How often do you see the outputs of the projection system and find yourself sort of, are you still surprised by them at times? Or at this point, do you feel like you kind of know what they're going to tell you ahead of time?
I am occasionally surprised because, there are a lot of algorithms involved. And sometimes there's some edge cases that are pretty surprising. I think Adam Warren of the Cubs this year, Zips actually loved Adam Warren as either a reliever or as a starter much more than I would have loved him. But it's interesting. A lot of times it's the most controversial ones that Zips is right on, and the things I know that Zips is correct on turn out to be terrible. And sometimes in the wrong direction. I remember some years ago before Cliff Lee's breakout, Zips actually projected Cliff Lee to be better than pretty much anyone did. But Zips was still wrong, just in the wrong direction.
Cliff Lee had a very odd career of like a couple pretty, average solid years, and then completely fell apart. And Indians fans sort of, I wouldn't say he was written off, but stopped thinking he might be anything special. And then suddenly he came back and was awesome and was, one of like the two or three best pitchers in baseball for 5 or 6 years. He had an odd career.
The funny thing is that if you look back at the Bartolo Colon trade, almost like the entire – most of the trade was active for a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, Phillips, Cliff Lee, Colon himself, Grady Sizemore, he kept coming back. But, he did just play last year. Now, Lee Stevens and Tim Drew aren't around. But that was actually a pretty good success rate for that trade. And Colon's still around. And he might actually – there's at least a chance that Colon is the last – player standing from that trade.
I was talking to someone about that exact thing. He's now officially the last former Montreal Expo and might outlast all of the guys from that trade, which is...
Yeah, he only has Brandon Phillips. I mean, Cliff Lee. Has Cliff Lee announced and I just missed it? Or is he still in that kind of vague...
His agent has kind of said, like, yeah, he's not coming back. I don't think he's held, like, a press conference.
Yeah, I could remember one. I didn't know maybe if I missed one.
Yeah, we've had, like, our, you know, we'll miss you, Cliff Lee stuff. But I don't think Cliff has officially said anything. It's just been through his agent.
But it's really weird when a veteran is traded for prospects. Most of the prospects work out, and the veteran still outlasts them.
Right.
I mean, Brandon Phillips is still around, but there's at least a chance that Cologne outlasts him.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty awesome, because, I mean, what's going to happen to Cologne? Is he going to get out of shape? Like, what is different in 5 years for Cologne that isn't now?
Well, and so to connect back with who we mentioned earlier, you know, Bartolo might play until he's 50. And if you go back to the 1997 Indians, Bartolo's rookie year, who was one of his teammates? Julio Franco.
Well, he was a spry 65.
Yeah, he was. But I think, you know, the two of them, they put their heads together and Julio passed a few secrets on to Bart.
I'm trying to think who else was around. Was Franco the oldest player on that team? I mean, in listed age.
I'm
trying to remember.
Probably like Dave Winfield and Eddie Murray were on the '95 Indians team, but they weren't there by the time '97 rolled around. So I'm not positive. And Julio Franco wasn't like a key part of the '97 team or anything like that.
Hershiser's. Birthday before or after Franco's listed?
I don't know. Yeah, they're the same. They're the same age.
Okay, Hershiser was there. What was the name of that lefty pitcher? I can't remember. Assenmacher.
Oh yeah, but no, he was younger.
Oh, he was younger. Okay,
it's Franco or Hershiser, give or take when their birthdays are.
See, all lefty relievers, you automatically assume they're 39.
Well, and Paul Assenmacher looked like he was 39 when he was 29. So,
well, he had a good mustache for at least a while.
He was a solid reliever. He was a solid that kind of guy. Every team should have one of those guys.
And he played for a lot of teams. You know, he had a fun career.
He did.
I bet you didn't expect us to get into Assenmacher talk.
He also looked a lot like my childhood friend's uncle, and so for a while I thought my childhood friend's uncle was Paul Assenmacher.
That'd be an interesting relation.
I think when you're a kid, like, you just fall into the trap of thinking everyone might be someone. My mom's maiden name, my mom's last name is Larkin, and as a kid, I thought Barry Larkin was probably my cousin.
Which turned out not to be, I assume.
Turned out not to be.
What is it? My sister, one of her childhood friends, was Eduardo Perez's cousin.
Solid.
So that was for real.
Nice.
And there was a minor league pitcher, Tom Zimborski, who I forget how I'm related to. I used to know, but he was in the Padres minor league system at the time. And there are not a lot of Zimborskis. So if you see a Zimborski, they tend to be related to me.
That's what I would figure. It turns out there's more than one branch of Larkins. So Barry Larkin, not my cousin.
Were you related to Gene Larkin, though? That's possible.
No, I mean, that would have been more probable, but apparently not related to Gene Larkin either.
Oh. Because, you see, if you tell people related to Barry Larkin, they think you're a liar. But if you tell people my cousin is Gene Larkin, no one's going to accuse you of making that up. They're not going to say, yeah, you're just talking like you're related to Gene Larkin, like a big shot.
Look at you name-dropping. Famous cousin Gene.
You're such a liar. Well, my dad's Danny Gladden, so bleh.
This whole discussion presumes you're talking to someone who knows the 1991 Twins pretty well.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, that's a good question, but there's
What kind of monster doesn't know the 91 Twins? Really? What kind of monster?
I can't answer you because you've got a lot of things going on there. You've got the Jack Morris branch. You've got, you know, Kirby, Herbeck. There's a lot of
Herbeck, Chuck Knobloch.
Yep.
Greg Gagne, who couldn't pronounce his last name properly.
Gary Gaetti. There's a lot going on in that team.
Rick Aguilera, Denny Nagel, Steve Petrosian was on that team, wasn't it? Yeah.
Was Denny Nagel was on that team?
Yeah, Denny Nagel was on that team. I don't think he appeared in the playoffs, but he was drafted by the Twins, and he was traded in the John Smiley trade to Pittsburgh.
All right, I will take your word for it. I do not recall him from the 91 Twins.
I am not making this up.
And
if you look it up and I'm wrong, you have permission to dub into the podcast, Dan Zaborski is liar.
No, but it's like saying you're related to Gene Larkin. No one's going to think you're making that up. You must clearly be telling the truth.
Yeah, my best friend was Jeff Rebelay.
Now I'm bummed out that I don't actually have a best friend who is a relatively minor former major league player.
I'm sorry. Tom Zaborski didn't make the minors. He washed out at Double-A. So he wasn't really a major leaguer.
I grew up down the street from Justin Olsen, who pitched in the Twins minor league system, and had a book written about him. He was one of two subjects of the book who were both minor leaguers for the Twins, and the other one was Francisco Liriano. So there's a book out there, I believe, called Throwing Bullets, that is about all-star pitcher Francisco Liriano and Jason Luckart childhood friend Justin Olsen. So I think that's my closest baseball connection.
My closest was Justin Singleton. That was Ken Singleton's son. I played against him in Little League, and he hit two home runs off of me. He didn't make the minors, but he did. I mean, he didn't make the majors, but he did make it to Triple A.
That's something.
Yeah, and I didn't know his name at the time. People just called him Ken Singleton's son.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer.
That's sad. You don't have your own identity.
So when Zips projections, do you think of them as your projections or Zips projections?
There's a whole psychological ball there between what's me and what's the computer, and I sometimes talk about it in an anthropomorphic nature. I think a psychologist could probably dissect quite a bit from my relationship with Zips, but it varies. Sometimes it's my enemy. Sometimes it's an extension of me. Sometimes it's a friend. Sometimes it's a stranger.
When it's wrong, which one is it?
Oh, when it's wrong, it's someone else's Zips. When Zips is really, really wrong about something, I'm like, oh, I can't do anything about it. It's the computer fault. I mean, you're talking to me, but I don't know what you want me to do about it.
That sounds like my wife talking about our dog. When she's well-behaved, she's her dog or our dog. And when she's a monster, she's my dog.
Plausible deniability is an important part of life.
So you mentioned Adam Warren earlier. Looking at over the Indians numbers, is there anyone for this year that you feel like you would take the over or under in terms of overall performance from?
I'm not really sure about Bradley Zimmer. Zips actually thinks that he could play in the majors pretty much okay right now. And I'm not quite sure about that. I would take the over on Clevinger.
Yeah, he's been really impressive lately.
Zips wasn't into him. Those are the ones that really jump out at me. Zips finally buys Carlos Carrasco. Never buys Josh Tomlin, but who would want to buy Josh Tomlin?
So you mentioned Clevinger. So, you know, you said you're higher on him. Can you pinpoint what it is in his track record that Zips is seeing that's causing a lower projection than you would maybe, you know, off the cuff have come up with for him?
It most likely comes down to his minor league translations. I don't actually have those in front of me, so I can't give like a super specific. Here, I'm typing really fast as we talk, so filibuster a little while I find this out.
Clevinger, who came on really strong last year and has looked great in camp in the last, you know, spring training so far, and is getting rave reviews from Francona and people who are watching there. So he's someone who a lot of Indians fans 2 weeks ago maybe hadn't heard of, but are starting to hear about a lot.
Looking at his translation, Zips was worried about before last season the walk rate. It was too high. I mean, he did have an ERA of nearly 5.5 at A-ball, and he was 23 at the time. So you can see why a computer might not understand completely. I think he's turned the corner. I think he'll beat Zips. So that's definitely the one Indian I'd point out as beating his projection. His projection's lousy. He'll do better than that.
All right. Well, and you mentioned Zips finally buying into Carlos Carrasco. I see that the number one comp for Carrasco was Curt Schilling. So yeah, that's a pretty good comp.
Yeah, Zips was always on the fence because he never really matched his peripheral numbers. But of course, last year his peripherals were so good that even if he didn't match them, there was enough of a lag there to still make him a really excellent pitcher. I don't know if he'll ever really match his FIP regularly, but he doesn't really need to.
Right. Is there a time frame for the comps? Like,
it's recent years. It's not saying that he's going to have Curt Schilling's career. It just says that in his late 20s, he's vaguely similar statistically to Curt Schilling in his late 20s.
Gotcha.
That's all it's saying. People always look when they see like a one common thing is when an okay second base prospect gets Robinson Cano near the top of his comps list. And be like, oh, so you're saying he's going to become Robinson Cano? I'm like, no, I'm saying he hit like Robinson Cano. And most prospects like Robinson Cano don't become Robinson Cano. Because he had some serious holes in his game as a prospect that went away really quickly in the majors. But it's not the typical path for someone who's comparable to 21-year-old Robinson Cano.
My favorite Zips comp this year for the Indians is Josh Tomlin, whose number one comp is Oil Can Boyd.
Oh, I love the oil. I can't say oil for some reason. I love the Oil Can Boyd. I've got mumbled tongue. My favorite is how Zips is picking cruel comps for Byron Buxton of the Twins every year for some reason. I don't know why. It's almost like it's trying to be cruel to Twins fans. And there's no way it has that kind of knowledge. But last year, the top comp for Byron Buxton was Carlos Gomez, which, I mean, he became a good player, but not in Minnesota.
Right.
This year, his top statistical comp was Lasting's millage.
Ooh.
I mean, Adam Jones was number two, and Carlos Gomez, again, was number three. But having that top comp of Lasting's millage, we'll see next year if Zip stops trolling Twins fans.
I hope it never stops trolling Twins fans. There's projected standings at Fangraphs too. Do those incorporate Zips or are those like a totally separate thing?
They incorporate Zips, but that's what they run. They're not canon Zips. I don't know if you're into Star Wars. Oh. Are you into Star Wars?
I don't want to get sidetracked for the next 3 hours. We can have a whole separate podcast sometimes just about, yes, I'm into Star Wars.
I was actually on the same flight as Christina Carl a few weeks ago. Because we were both
Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. We were talking on the plane because we had a flight from Hartford to Chicago. And I switched seats so that we could sit next to each other and talk. And we talked about Star Wars almost for 3 hours of the flight. Just the things about Star Wars, you know, about how everywhere is the something planet and whether they'd have strip clubs. If everybody's a clone, it'd be really weird if you went to a male strip club and all the other guys look just like you. we had a lot of discussions about Star Wars. Oh, but anyway, the relevant thing is I think I lost my track.
The Fangraph standings use
Zips.
Timothy novels of.
Okay, now I remember the connection. There actually was a connection. The Zips projections are like that I give out. That's like the top George Lucas canon. Well, other uses of Zips are kind of like the extended universe.
Right.
Fangraph's use of Zips, that's kind of like Admiral Thrawn, which it's related to Zips. But it's not the core George Lucas canon Zips.
I understand your analogy perfectly, and I don't care if anyone else does.
Well, that's the fun, because it's not always fun to make jokes if everybody's going to get it. There's kind of this delicious arrogance of having a joke that's beyond people like, huh, you wouldn't understand. Fetch me my slippers.
So I've got the non-canon Zip standings in front of me.
Yes.
They've got the Cubs with the best record in baseball, 96 wins.
I will reveal that generally stays up. That when you see the ESPN projections, there will be a lot of Cubs related googaw.
Yeah. Well, understandably, they're living in Chicago. I've sort of been waiting for them eventually to get their act together and and be what they could be, and it looks like they're finally doing that.
I hope so, because, you know, there's a, for a projectionist, there's kind of this sad moment when you've realized, okay, I've projected the Cubs to win the most games in baseball and to be the favorite to win the World Series. There's that moment of just of horror when you realize that your predictions are reliant on the Cubs winning the World Series. That's what happens to have to make me look smart.
They only have to win the division. Then you can always fall back on the playoffs being a crapshoot. Anything can happen. As long as they win their division, I feel like you can say it did pretty well.
Yeah, but we use that excuse so often that even if true, it's hard to say anymore and not have people roll their eyes at you.
The projected standings also have, with 86 wins, have the Indians winning the Central, and then have the Tigers and White Sox both right at 500, have the Twins and the Royals at 77. I have to think anyone who does any sort of projections, even non-canon related to projection standings, the Royals is what you're hearing the most about.
Oh, probably. But you see, the nice thing is Zips was pretty off with the Royals last year, but it wasn't as off as the other projections were. So I could say I was only half as bad, because Zips at least projected the Royals to win 81 or 82 games last year, which of course was off, but when they win 96 games, you're better off projecting 81 or 82 than like 73. But really, the story of the American League is that the difference between the top team in the AL and the bottom team in the AL by projections in Zips, it's only 11 games between the number one team projected by wins and the number 15 team projected by wins. If you look at the National League, the difference between the top team and the bottom team in projected wins is 26 wins. Essentially, by Zips, the top five teams and the bottom five teams in baseball are the National League. And the AL is kind of all in this muddly middle.
Yeah, everything I'm seeing plays out the same. It feels like there's like seven teams that might make the playoffs in the National League and pretty close to 15 teams that have at least a puncher's chance in the American League.
Yeah, that's the thing about the American League. I mean, I would call the A's and Twins as having uphill battles to win to make the playoffs. But the thing about the American League is you can make an argument for any team to make the playoffs and not sound like a complete idiot.
Well, that's good. It's nice to be able to not sound like a complete idiot.
I won't be able to convince anyone the A's have a good chance at the playoffs. But I can convince. I can put enough ifs and buts that it at least can sound remotely plausible. Now I try to make a case that the Phillies are going to make the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah. People look at you like you're just biggest idiot.
Yeah, I mean, at some point it feels like, and I don't know if projections, like once there's bad teams, the good teams get to play more games against the bad teams, which kind of pushes the gap between them farther and farther, it would seem like.
Yeah, there's that kind of polarizing, and there are not enough interleague play games to cancel that out.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, like the Mets and Nationals are, at least in theory, going to be fighting with each other all year, but they're going to be, again, in theory, beating the crap out of the Phillies and Braves a whole lot of times, too.
Yeah, that nice job if you can get it. Playing the Braves and Phillies a lot, that's a very good thing.
So coming back, just kind of to close things up with the AL Central. So, again, we ran through the projections that put the Indians on top. If you had to bet your right to see Star Wars episodes 8 and 9 when they hit theaters on who wins the AL Central this year, which team would you pick?
I actually had the Indians.
All right.
I guess that would have been pertinent information, but I didn't want to reveal it. Quite. No, I actually – okay, right now the Zip standings for the AL Central, the mean projection is Cleveland 84 – three teams at 83, and the Twins at 77. So that is a pretty close division. The divisional odds are ridiculous. It's like 27, 23, 22, 22, 5. It's a division where a lot of different things can happen. There's just a lot of scenarios, really. And we don't have to make crazy scenarios for four of the teams. There are no great teams in the AL. I know there's people saying, well, the Royals won the World Series. They're a great team. Like, no, they're not. Let's not be ridiculous. They're a good team. They have some flaws. They're not unstoppable. But really, we are going to have to just wait and see.
If the Royals outplay projections individually and as a team, like, is that – if they do it again, because this would be like the third or fourth year in a row – like, at what point is that just an annoying headache to you? And at what point do you just kind of laugh, like, or do you laugh it off?
I don't know. I tend to laugh things off. I don't, because you see, when you do a lot of projections, you're aware with what the error range is. Because there's a thought experiment that goes along with this is, imagine that you know that all 30 teams are exactly 500 to win every game. You would still expect six teams to win 73 or fewer games or, 89 or more games simply from random chance. And that's when you know for a fact the exact strength of all 30 teams. And you never even know that with any kind of accuracy. And you never even know if you're right or not. If a team wins 90 games, you're never really quite sure if they're a 90-win team or an 88-win team that got lucky or a 92-win team that got unlucky. You never even get to really know if you're right or not. We're predicting the future. The future is extremely foggy. All we can do is peer through the fog a little bit. So I know that math demands I be wrong quite a bit. So I'm used to it.
That's a good attitude to have. Well, Dan, we appreciate you coming on the show. We will have to figure out some sort of venue to have our three-hour Star Wars conversation.
Oh, we can make, next time we talk, we can make some more Star Wars analogies.
I'm going to get to work on it. I'm going to start mapping out who is who in this scenario versus that scenario. I could go all week with it.
Yeah, I mean, we had a productive podcast. We talked about Ecto Coolers. We talked about Admiral Thrawn. Lots of Indian-related subjects.
And we will probably edit everything but the Ecto Cooler and grab Admiral Thrawn out of it. That's really all I think America wants.
Yeah, just the baseball stuff. You can get a lot of baseball. You don't get high C juice box analysis from many sources.
That's what we're here for. Well, thanks again, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you again to Dan Zimbrowski for joining us. That was a pretty great interview.
I'd spoken with him once before, and we interact on Twitter semi-frequently, and he's a fun guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So getting right into our last segment today is going to be the Twitter questions. We had two today. First one from XC Warrior 1, which was, if you had to peg one of the minor league contracts to make it this year, which would it be? Any Scott Kazmir impact types? The Indians signed a bunch of relievers, a bunch of outfielders. I don't personally see any of them being quite Scott Kazmir, he was worth almost 3 WAR when he came back. I don't think either any of these guys are going to be that. If there's anybody that's going to be close, I think it might be either Tommy Hunter or Craig Stamen. They're kind of the same situation. They were both injured. Or Hunter wasn't a minor league contract, but Craig Stamen, I think if they keep him on, they're going to owe him money. And I think he could be something good out of the bullpen. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think anyone's going to do what Scott Kazmir did. I don't think you should ever expect any, guy who signs that kind of deal to work out. That was, a lottery ticket that hit. In terms of most likely, yeah, I think one of those relievers, there's just a pretty good chance that they're going to get an opportunity. And any reliever who's been decent in the recent past has, a decent chance at doing the same thing again. So I think in terms of most likely, yeah, you're looking at those guys. And the position player side, I mean, right now Will Venable feels like less and less likely to get much of an opportunity because Naquin's playing so well.
He's basically it. You got that and Shane Robinson and
there's not Bobby a lot Grossman. Of particularly interesting candidates. I think hopefully one of those reliever, I mean, hopefully both of them, but I'd be happy if one of those relievers turns out to be like a solid fifth arm in the bullpen would be, frankly, for the contract, a good result.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of telling that the Indians don't need anybody to be that big lottery ticket. They have enough in place already that some of these guys just be above average. I think they'll be good.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many of the minor league deals even have room, which again is a good thing because the Indians already have such a filled out roster.
Right. Yeah, they're not in the situation they were a few years ago where it's like, oh, we really need someone to pan out from this group.
Let's just hope it's Scott Kazmir. Okay, so the second question from Bud, 5883-1769. Will Tyler Naquin be the starting center fielder to begin the season? And when Almonte comes back, who is going to get the spot? Do you want to take that one first?
Sure. I more and more feel like he is going to get the job. There's been a little discussion about, you know, the Indians. I actually just today wrote about how it's been literally decades since the Indians last had a rookie opening day starter. For anyone old enough to remember him, it was 30 years ago in 1986. When the Indians catcher was Andy Allinson, and that was the last time the Indians started a rookie, which is the longest stretch for any team. But I more and more feel like Naquin's going to be on the roster. In terms of a technicality, some people have pointed out that they're almost certainly going to be facing David Price on opening day, and since he's potentially a platoon issue, might mean Naquin's on the roster but not actually in the lineup on opening day. But since the heart of the question, I think, is, you know, who's going to be the regular center fielder, I'm starting to feel like it is going to be Naquin. How about you?
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I don't know when that suddenly started rising up, but all of a sudden I'm getting really excited about Naquin. All off season, I wasn't really paying attention to him, but even before spring training a little bit, it's just the idea of him playing center is getting more and more enticing if he can stay healthy. And the second part of the question. Oh, go ahead.
So I was just going to say that I feel like the initial excitement was almost like the at least he's not someone who's already kind of failed at the major league level. So
yeah, that's always what it is. Like,
hey, maybe, but then, and we've spent so much time talking about spring training stats, you shouldn't put much into it, but he's playing really, really well so far. He's batting like 400 something, and it's only, you know, 8 or 9 games. But he's got, you know, I think 3 or 4 extra base hits. He's made some nice plays in center field. If you're looking for someone to get attached to in spring break, a minor leaguer putting up really good numbers, competing for a job, like that's the natural guy to be drawn to.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to admit that I like getting overhyped about prospects. Last year it panned out with Lindor, not so much Urshela, but I like watching prospects come up for the first time. After you watch them playing for so long in the grainy minor league baseball screens, it's great. So the second part of his question is, when Almonte comes back, who's going to get the spot? If somebody's playing well enough, I don't see why they would stop that to give Almonte his position back. It's not like he played well enough last year to really cement his spot, and they don't really owe him anything. So I think if it's working out in center field, whoever's there is going to keep it. And if it's not, maybe Almonte get a chance. But I think the best case for Almonte in general is to be a fourth outfielder anyway. So that's what I think he'll be when he comes back.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Like, I mean, that question, that situation will take care of itself, you know, 80 games into the season. You know, if it's Naquin or whoever's playing center field, like you said, if they're playing well, Almonte's track record with the team isn't long enough that it makes sense to bump someone else who's playing well from a starting job. You know, I think when his suspension's up, he'll be on the roster. But like you said, if the three outfielders are playing well, then I think, you know, he starts 1 or 2 games a week filling in for guys. And that'll be kind of his role. And, you know, that's sort of one of the consequences of doing something that gets you taken off the field for half a season is if you're not a star, you know, you sort of lose your place in line.
Yeah, that's a big consequence for him, especially. This was probably his job to lose in center field, I would think.
Yeah, I think
before this all happened, I think he just kind of...
I think he did enough last year to be the front runner for the job. Right. And unless something went wrong for him in spring training... but something went wrong for him.
He's kind of in the situation that Naquin was in before. Almonte is in the situation that Naquin is in before Almonte got suspended. Where that if he gets a chance to take it now, he really has to, or it's over for him, I think. Because if somebody else is outperforming him when he comes back, he doesn't have much of a chance to stick.
Yeah. Well, when Tyler Naquin is his generation's Lou Gehrig, Abraham Almonte can be Wally Pipp.
There you go. Okay. So that feels like a short episode because, I mean, we did the interview. Spoiler alert, we did it way ahead of the recording, but...
Well, not way ahead.
Well, a little bit ahead.
It was the same night.
We did it last September, and I mean, things are a little outdated, but it'll be
fun. Dan Zimborski with his 2013 Zips projections here to talk to us tonight.
How do you feel about Scott Kazmir? Do you think he'll be good? Yeah. So, I think that was a good show.
I agree. And we'll talk again in a week.
Yep. And for anybody listening, if you want to submit any kind of feedback, I'm going to start including a little form in the bottom of the regular post on letsgotribe.com. If you could fill that out with any kind of thing you want, you won't really hurt our feelings too much, I don't think.
Maybe I'll cry a little. I'm sensitive, but you won't hurt Matt's
feelings. You will. I'll just cry internally and just bottle it all up. That's all. It'll come out in angry writing later on. But yeah. Okay. Thanks for listening.